It's good to see you all. Change perspective when I'm sitting at the front and then turn around and come and look here. You look brilliant today. We're going to think about some great people of faith this morning. One just at the beginning to begin with is somebody who's been in the news this week, Billy Graham. Great person of faith was Billy Graham. Amazing that he was on the front of the BBC website news. I mean, I thought, wow, that's a good, it says something of his influence in this time when faith is not something that the news channels touch very easily or readily. Actually, he was then in the Radio 4 Obituaries programme, which is one of those things that's sometimes playing when I'm in the car. And he was the first. And they had quotes from him by friends of his and whatever. But at the end of it, they finished off with the music playing with a recording of one of his altar calls. And where there were gaps, they filled it in with some of his other preaching. And basically, the last sort of 45 seconds of this obituary was an altar call. I'm thinking, Lord, let's have Radio 4 convert some people through Billy Graham even after he's died. I think it was brilliant. He had a massive impact. I mentioned it earlier at the earlier service and was told that, hey, there'll be a fair few people here who went to see Billy Graham. How many of you went to see Billy Graham then? Ta-da. Yeah, okay. So, you are some of the 77 million people who went to see him in person, and they reckon 215 million people in total when you count people who listen to recordings or watch them. So amazing, one person achieving all of that. And amongst those number were seven American presidents face to face as well. So that's quite, what a faithful follower of Jesus was Billy Graham. What an inspiration to us. So that's person number one. Then I'm going to pick a couple more people who we've heard about in our readings. Person number two is Abraham, or halfway through the reading, he becomes Abraham, which is a bit easier for us to remember and pronounce. And he is the father figure of the Jewish nation from which has born the Christianity. In fact, also he's the father of Islam. He's father of three religions, Abraham. He's also somebody who had a lot of faith. In Genesis 15, it says, Abraham believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. He was a righteous man. When Paul, in the New Testament, is looking for a way of giving examples about faith and law and how we should live by faith, he picks Abraham as his example in Romans. Quite a person of God is Abraham. What an amazing example to us from way back then, and then from a bit nearer, 1,000 years or so, we have Peter. Peter, who is the first of Jesus' followers that we hear recognizing who he is. You are the Messiah. That's what Peter said of Jesus when Jesus asked. That was only two verses before the reading that we just had, actually. Jesus said, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, you are the Messiah. And in Matthew's gospel, we read that Jesus said, on this rock, I will build my church. And he says, I will give you the keys of the kingdom. So amazing entrusting of stuff to Peter that Jesus did. He gave him such significance. This man of faith, great people, great examples, great inspiration, great faith, great trust. These three people we've thought about. It's encouraging and it's a bit daunting. I mean, these are those people. But what about me? I'm not like them. Well, not that I know too much about Billy Graham, so we'll skip Billy Graham. But I'm going to look at the other two people who we've heard about from in our Bible passages and just think about how in their lives there are things which might actually encourage us not to be daunted when we think about their great faith and what they did. Genesis chapter 17, where our reading comes from, is where God makes this covenant with Abraham. Already last Sunday, when we began Lent, we heard about God's covenant with Noah. Well, this is pretty much the next covenant in the Bible. These are big ticket things. Except that this wasn't the first time that Abraham, or Abram as he was then, had heard from God. It was actually the third time that God had come and spoken to him, telling him that he would increase in number, he would be the father of nations, and that all nations would be blessed through him. What wonderful promises. Very encouraging. And in the middle of this passage, God's promise about a future also involves a giving of a new name. Abraham becomes Abraham. Sarai becomes Sarah, also much easier to pronounce, the mother of many nations. Another example, a bit like with Noah, of God choosing to give men and women a part in his plans. How wonderful that is, that God chooses to use people in his plans, even us maybe. So here is this promise from God about Abraham having many nations flowing from him, but there is a problem, because a son from Sarah, that was what was promised in this reading. Well, Paul, writing in the letter to Romans, has a particular take on this. It's very positive about Abraham and his faith. It's not quite so positive about how things were going physically. So in Romans 4 we read, "Without weakening his faith, Abraham faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised." Wow. That's a great example, isn't it? Faced with, good as dead, dead. He still thought, yes, God can do this. How can we cope with that level of faith? How can we look at somebody and say, oh yeah, I'll do the same thing? It seems very, very daunting. It seems like Abraham can't go wrong. Well, let's rewind a little bit actually at this point. Let's rewind to when we first hear about Abraham, or Abram, which is in Genesis chapter 11. Pretty much the second thing we hear about him, he exists, he marries Sarai, and she can't have any children. This is when he was 75 and she was 66, I think, a bit of maths there. This is not when they first got married, but when God first came and spoke to them and said to Abraham, "Leave this land and go to the land I'll show you, and I will make many nations of you." Wow. Well, they took a bit of a windy route. They went through Egypt, some bad decisions there. Look it up. But eventually, they settled in Canaan, and God again made a promise to Abraham that through your own flesh and blood, I will give you many offspring. They will be as uncountable as the stars. That's an amazing promise. But time ticked by and 10 years passed by, and there was this wonderful promise of God, but nothing had changed with Abraham and with Sarai. And so they were just 10 years older, and Sarai still couldn't have children. So they thought, let's just sort God's plan out here for him. And they decided that what they'd do is something which involved Sarai's maid, Hagar. And in the end, she had a son, which was Abraham's son. So they had a son of Abraham's flesh and blood so that God could start doing his work and carry on with his plan. They had sorted it for God. Well done them. God's impossible plan was made possible by a bit of good human common sense. Except that that wasn't God's plan. He had jumped the gun. He had messed up, really. Abraham had messed up. This great man of God who believed God's promise still got things pretty humongously wrong. He tried to rush God. He went on doing his own stuff, their own stuff, instead of waiting for God's stuff. So Abraham is a great lesson of faith for us. St. Paul would tell us that. But he's also maybe a lesson of how not to do it just now and then. So there we have Abraham. And then let's look at the first part of our gospel reading, which is the bit which is about Peter. We can see, actually, that this is not Peter's finest hour. We know that. Nobody else, as far as we're aware, gets told, "Get behind me, Satan," but Peter does. So we know he's messed up. The example of Peter from our reading is not a good one at all. But we can still be encouraged by Peter in this reading because of the fact that it really is just moments before that something really huge and significant happened. It was just moments before that that Peter had this wonderful revelation that Jesus was the Messiah. And it was just moments before that that Jesus was so positive about Peter and told him that this was a God thing, that he had got this message, and Jesus gave him this wonderful commission that he was such a significant part of the future of the church, the rock on which the future church would be built. That had just happened moments before. Peter had this great moment of seeing things with the eyes of faith. And then straight afterwards, he goes crashing into some human thinking. He messes up. How encouraging for the rest of us, because actually we know that we mess things up. Even in Peter's finest hour, a moment later, he messed it up. Peter loses his faith head. He's been seeing things in a God-given, faithful way. But then when Jesus starts talking about how Jesus was going to suffer and die, and Peter has just said, "You're the Messiah, you're going to save us," he can't cope with his human head to see how Jesus saving us is going to happen through Jesus dying. And so he says, "No, you mustn't do this." So Jesus says, "I can't listen to you. Get away from me, Satan. I must focus on my Father's way of doing things." And Jesus is going to save the world. The rest is history, as it were. He is the Messiah. He is going to achieve so much more than Peter could ever have imagined, could ever have realized. It took a while for Peter and the rest of the disciples to realize what was going on or what had gone on by then. It was only after Jesus died, but then rose again. And then he ascended to heaven and he sent the Holy Spirit, and the disciples became aware that this was the beginning of some amazing thing. God using people again for his purposes. They worked out how Jesus had saved the world so much more than if he had just done something with conquering somebody in history in that moment, in that place. No, God's plan was so much bigger, but far too big to fit in a human head, even Peter's human head at that point. So we have Abraham and Peter, two great people of faith, two great examples for us, and we see that they got it wrong sometimes. One of them messed up by fretting and trying to do God's work for him. And the other went from a super high to a super low in a couple of sentences. And yet they are still great people of faith. They are still examples brought to us in the Bible. And I think that makes it feel much more possible that we can be great people of faith too. We can be great people of faith too. So how is God calling faith from us now? In general terms, I think that some of how God calls faith from us now is calling us to believe what God can do, which was really what Abraham was called to believe. That's personally what God can do. What can he do in your life? What can he do about you? Does he love you? Can he really do that? Yes, he can. Can you believe that? Can he bless you? Yes, he can. Can you believe that? Is he pleased with you? Does he delight in you when your life is reflecting the way he made you to be? Yes, he delights in you. He's pleased with you. He loves you. This is what God can do. He does do. That's who he is, really. He keeps his promises. Can you believe that God will keep his promises? He does do that. That's what God can do. For us as individuals, also for us as a church, do we believe that maybe, like he said to Abraham, he can make us more numerous, that he can bring new life in us, amongst us here, and through people coming to get to know Jesus? Can we believe God's promises to us? Can we take that step of faith, that huge step of believing? And if we do take that step of believing, can we take with it that we can also believe this is still the case, even when it doesn't seem to be happening quite the way that we thought it would, or in the timing that we thought it would? We don't need to fret. We don't need to try to fix it with our own schemes, but wait for God's timing, even if we'd like things to happen quicker. It is quite a test of faith, but we won't always get it right. Abraham shows us that we're in good company if we don't always get it right. So there's something about believing what God can do, but then there's something about believing who God is, which is what Peter showed to us, how Peter recognized Jesus as the Messiah. But once we recognize who God is, there is a next step of realizing that his ways of doing things don't fit in our boxes. That's what Peter had to cope with. And that his way of doing things may involve tough stuff or things that don't seem to make sense to us. Will we have faith to follow anyway? It is quite a test of faith, and we won't always get it right. But if we look at Peter, we realise that we'd be in good company. He got things very wrong at important times, but God still used him hugely. If we're going to take the plunge to live lives of faith, then it will be hard at times, and it won't follow the ways and the values of the world around us that would be easiest to follow. The second part of that reading from Mark's Gospel spells this out. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Are you ready for the next steps of faith that God is offering to you? Look at Billy Graham and you can see just how much God is able to do in this age now with one person who gives their life to him and walks faithfully following what God's calling him to. Then look at Abraham and Peter and realize with these two great people of God that actually we're not always going to get it right, and God uses us anyway. That is really encouraging. Even when we sometimes get it spectacularly wrong, God still uses us. God has plans and promises for each of us. What will they be? What will they mean? It's not all clear. Some of it is clear, others it aren't. But will you say yes to God anyway? As a church here, we're saints on the move. God is calling us as a whole church to step out in faith. And over the last months, God has helped us to see his direction for us as a common sense of God's direction. But it's not all clear how it works out in detail. Are you up for the adventure to say yes anyway? We need to do that before we can see the whole picture. Whether it's for ourselves or whether it's for ourselves as a church, individuals or a church, are we prepared to be bold, knowing that God carries on using us even if we don't get it right? Even if that's spectacularly wrong sometimes, or that we go wrong for many years, still God calls us. Still, God can use us. So let's join and encourage each other to step out in faith in our lives as individuals, as fellow pilgrims, fellow disciples, we urge each other on. And in our lives as a church, as saints on the move together, let's join together and step out in faith. And I'm going to finish with a story. It's a story from the 19th century, somewhere in the second half of 18-somethings. So the exact details are a little bit a long time ago, but it's a true story. And there are photographs of some of what I'm about to talk about. It's about a funambulist. Anybody know what a funambulist is? George. Tightrope walker, excellent. Good stuff. He was a man called Charles Blondin. And he was a bit of a showman as well, actually. And when he got to America, he was French originally. He ended up living in England at the end. But halfway through, he was in America all of the time. And he saw the Niagara Falls and he thought, like none of the rest of us would do, aha, I'm going to walk across there on a tightrope. And he made a massive show of it. He got lots of advertising throughout the United States. On this day, the great Charles Blondin is going to walk across the Niagara Falls. Loads of people were interested. They put on special trains to get people there. Most people not believing it would work and wanting to watch the spectacle of his demise. There we go. But anyway, he did get the people together. He did get a 2-inch rope right the way across there. In the middle of that rope, it was 60 foot lower than the place it started, just because it was such a big, saggy rope. There were watery bits. There were uphill bits and downhill bits, and it was a real challenge. And they put some guy ropes, thinner ones, to try and keep it still, but they couldn't reach the middle bit. So the middle 50 feet was just at the whim of the wind where it went. And there he was, and he set out. And he made it. He got across from the United States to Canada. And then a few moments later, or maybe a few minutes later, he's suddenly coming back again. He's got something on his back. He gets halfway across and he takes off his back an old camera, the sort which sits on a tripod, balances it on the rope, takes a photo of the crowds on the far side, and then carries on to the other end. And then he says, come back, I'm going to do this again. And some weeks later, he came back. People came back and he did it again. But this time he did it and he turned around and walked backwards on some of it. And then he came over with a sack over his head so he couldn't see, and he still managed it. And he just came back and did this again and again. And different times he did it, he did different things. He did somersaults on the rope in the middle of the Niagara Falls. He took stuff with him. He pulled up a bottle of wine from the Maid in the Mist boat underneath and had a sip of wine there in the middle. He had a table and chairs at one point. Apparently the chair fell off once, but he didn't. And it was doing a sort of a meal in the middle of there. And then the biggest thing, he took a wheelbarrow across at certain times. And he took a stove and he cooked an omelette on the rope in the middle of the Niagara Falls and lowered the omelette down to the Maid in the Mist, where they enjoyed some breakfast, which apparently was very nice. So this man, by that time, everybody realised, yes, he could do it. They may have come the first time to see him fall, but no, he wasn't going to fall. And the story goes that at one stage, he had another plan of what he would do. And he said to everybody there, do you believe, after you've seen all this, that I could actually carry a person across there? And everybody said, yes! And then he said, can I have a volunteer then? And everybody said, nothing. Well, there weren't any volunteers. Well, maybe this was a volunteer. In the end, he did carry somebody across. He carried his own manager across. He was a small guy, Blondin, and his manager was a normal guy. They both weighed the same as each other, so he's carrying double his weight, but actually about kind of getting on to a quarter of his weight or more also was this great big pole he had. So he's carrying a huge amount across. It was not easy, and he had to put the stop on where the guy ropes were, and he got the guy off his back for a bit because he realised it wasn't easy. And the middle bit, where there were no guys, he realised he was going to actually have to run that bit with this guy on his back, which he did. And he's got to the other side, a guy rope snapped just there. And so there were snapped guy ropes in all of this, but he got this guy across and he was okay. What an amazing thing, this guy, his manager. Lots of people believed this was possible, but only one person was prepared to take the plunge. No, that's the bad way of putting it. Now, only one person was prepared to actually take that step of getting up on his back and saying, I believe you and I'm going to trust you with my life. Well, Charles Blondin was a guy. He died finally in London of complications to do with diabetes. It's amazing. He lived this crazy life, but he survived all these crazy things. He was a man. He was fallible. He could have fallen in. But his manager trusted him enough. God is God. God is completely trustworthy. And God calls us to believe in him, yes, but also to trust him and to get on there, out there with him. It will be very scary at times. There'll be times when we don't want to look down. And it may be that we feel we've got loads that we're carrying, that we can't see how we're going to balance. Well, actually, God can do that bit. Apparently, Blondin said to his manager in that moment, "You are Blondin now. You just hold on to me. You move when I move, and you stay still when I stay still, and you sway if I sway. Don't try and keep your balance. I'll do all the balancing, otherwise we're both down there." And that's what the guy did. Well, in a sense, God gives us that offer. Cling on to him. He'll do the balancing. He'll take us over the difficult bits. If we've got stuff we're carrying which seems too heavy for us, give it to him. God can carry us across. Are we up for that step of faith? Are we able to do that in this day, in this Lent, in this season for our church, in the rest of our lives, in the rest of your life? Will you dare? Will you believe? And will you trust and grab onto God and let him go with you wherever he wants you to go? I'm thinking of Billy Graham. He didn't finish meetings by going and sitting down again. I might be about to mess things up here, but anyway, he used to do, "Hey everybody, if you think something's going on here, then you need to respond." And I'm not very prepared for this, but I'm going to do that as well, actually. This might be the moment of saying, "I've not done any of this stuff before, but today's the day I'm going to say, yes, I do believe. I haven't got it all worked out, but I do believe that God is there. He's there for me, and I'm going to follow him." Or it might be a day when you're saying, "I know that for some years now, I've been heading in the wrong direction, and I've been trying to do it what I think is the right way, but actually it's not God's way. So I want to get back to saying, I'm going to follow you, God." Or it might be that you know that you've just messed up big time, and it's still ringing in your ears or in your memory, and you want to say, turn around and remember that God says, "I still love you. I still want you. Still got great plans for you. We're going forwards together." So if any of those things are part of what you're thinking, I'm going to challenge you now. I'm going to ask everybody to stand up if you can. Do just everybody stand. But if you feel that there's something that you need to respond to, a matter of faith, that you want to say to God, "Yes, this is me today. Doesn't matter what, doesn't matter what other people think. And it's a you and God moment," then in a moment I'll say, come out the front, and two or three of us will just wander around praying without asking you any questions, just praying that God will help you to have that faith, that he'll carry you where you need to be carried, and that he'll help you on the next step. So if you think that today is a step of faith day, if it's a I'm going to trust that God can hold me day, then just do come forward to the front now as the rest of us stand.